Thank you very much for that introduction. Can you hear me? No. Can you hear me now? Awesome. I guess I'll maybe use this microphone. Is this any better? No.
It's working.
Now, maybe that's a little bit better? Yes. All right. Very impressive introduction and a very weak start. I hope that doesn't continue on through the rest of the presentation. This is my first time at Access, and I'm very glad to be here. And I do wish I had been here before now. It looks like the perfect kind of conference for me to learn a fantastic amount from what all of you are doing. And I hope maybe in a small way I can help contribute some knowledge back to the rest of you. What I want to talk to you about is our social bookmarking tool that we developed at the University of Michigan Library called mTagger. What it is, it's much like any social bookmarking tool that you're familiar with, Delicious, and I miss the dots in their name. I wish they hadn't changed that. That was, I think, far more clever. And I also wonder how much they paid somebody for the full name. Furl, and then tagging in a whole range of social networking sites, Flickr and Facebook and that kind of thing. But what we've done is something akin to, some of the libraries that have done things like this, and PenTags is probably the best known of those. But we built it as a way for our scholars, our students, faculty, staff, to organize their academic life in the context of the library. Ways to bookmark their things and organize them in ways that make sense to them, share it with others, and try to build a common pool of knowledge. You know what a tag is. I won't go through that. But that last point is really, I think, the main one. And it's not just it helps you as the person who did the tagging find something new, but it's a way to kind of open up your file folders. And the way we're thinking about it is to open up your academic research and the things that you're interested in and the things that you're thinking about or may someday get to thinking about to other scholars and other areas of the university who might not know that you exist. The idea I had behind this, and that when we first built this tool, which launched about the beginning of this year, about 8 months ago now, was I had this kind of vision of probably a library that never actually ever was, in which you'd run the old library, the dusty books in the shelves, the beautiful reading room that was actually used, and you had scholars who would chance upon each other somewhere deep in the stacks, reaching for the same book, not in a romantic way, but they would discover each other doing, there's somebody else here who's actually interested in obscure topic that I thought I was the only one doing. And once they got over the shock and the horror that their research wasn't original, that they might actually have a conversation with each other. I have the sense that in this digital world, a lot of that is being lost, that the chance of having the physical library be the nexus of where academic stuff happens is changing. And I don't know that that's a good thing. So we hope to build a system that would kind of create a way for our researchers to perhaps meet virtually around the things that they were studying through their shared use of tags or discovery of other people who had tagged things the same way that they had. And that's really kind of the idea behind the tool and in our application of it. So we've built mTagger. Of course, it's the University of Michigan. Absolutely everything on campus starts with an M. It's some unwritten rule. You've got mPloy, which is the job service, terrible pun. You've got M this, M that. So of course we had to be mTagger because not original. But it made a nice little logo, which you see there, a little M tag, which is not a toe tag from a morgue, really. We were accused of that initially. So we've built mTagger actually into some of the systems that we provide the campus. So instead of being only a bookmarklet, which we do offer, it's actually integrated into the catalog, into all the library web pages, into our digital image repository, and into journals and scholarly journals that the library publishes for the academic community. And as I said, there is a bookmarklet that lets you tag absolutely anything, anywhere, as long as it has a persistent URL, or that the URL that is shown in the location bar will actually work for you at a later time. And of course, there's the tag cloud, the tagging that appears on a page, and then there's the account that you go to within mTagger, where you can organize your tags and see what other people have tagged, find things. something that set us a little bit apart, I think, from certainly the public internet bookmarking tools is the idea that we brought in from the library of collections. And that tags that are things in the catalog may actually be for many users somehow inherently different from tags from web pages or tags from images. And so we maintained in the metadata a kind of a history of what kind of thing it was when it went into the system. It's not really obvious, necessarily obvious to the users that were doing that. But when you make a tag, it's added not just to your tag cloud in your own personal collection in the giant, humongous tag cloud, but there's also kind of collection-specific tags so that you can narrow things down, that if you really only want to know about what people have tagged in the catalog or tagged in images, you can just whittle it down to that very quickly. And we have a catch-all for everything else. We determine collections based on URLs. We map collections to URLs, but for the most part, our things make sense that way. But anything that we don't recognize kind of goes into a humongous other bin, and we need to figure out some way to maybe break that up a little bit, because other can be things in our library system that don't map by URL, they're on a different server, they're odd, or things in the public internet. So that's kind of a little bit of a messy bin. And as I mentioned, the integration with the site, that it's actually kind of baked into the website and into the catalog, so that it's all, everything, it's built there, and you don't really have to go outside of the place that you're looking at, the page that you're looking at, to get access to the full tagging application. So there are three basic ways to tag. On all of our website, we have this lovely standard navigation. There's an upper right, you can see the tag this page link. That's actually a little menu. You pull it down. You get options to view the tag, search tags, tag it, kind of reinforcing the tag this page item. And so that's kind of where we have navigation. We've added it there. This is a sample of the tag appearing at the bottom of an item record in our catalog. Again, we here, and at the bottom of web pages, I'll show you in a minute, we also display the tag cloud. And you can tag through this cloud just by clicking, the tag this page there in the upper left. And you can see tags that other people have assigned. And then we have a bookmarklet, which you can just stick in your browser toolbar and go crazy from there. We've been interested to see where people do their tagging from. I really thought that the navigation bar was going to be the most obvious place, because that's right at the top of the page, it's visible, it's got the cute little tag up there, eye-catching, and it's really not. Only a tiny percent of the tagging is done there. Now, granted, that's a smaller percentage than the number of things that could be tagged that way. Only the web pages have the navigation. All the things in the library catalog don't. Other pages obviously don't. But the numbers are wildly disproportional. It's a third lower than it ought to be by just kind of how many things that are tagged versus where they're tagged from. The bookmarklet gets quite a bit, and this is also interesting because that's 18% of the tagged items are from the bookmarklet, which is much more than things that don't have a tag cloud or a tag this link on it. So people are using that on pages where it's more obvious, which also is a little bit counterintuitive to me. But I guess it speaks to a set of users and how much they like to have the bookmarklet. That functionality has sort of risen to be an easy access point to functionality through browsers that enable bookmarks. And then the tag cloud is the humongous big blue piece there. Once you click any one of those tagging doodads, no matter where the source is, you get a little tagging window. We pull in the document title from the web page, and then there's a chance to put in your own title, either because the one on the web page is utterly wrong or meaningless, or meaningful to you. So you can put in an alternate title, which kind of goes with you. Of course, you put in your tags, and if you've already tagged that page, it tells you what you've already, if you, you know, you're adding tags, it tells you what you've done already. And it tells you what other people have tagged that page, and you can just click the text to re-tag it or add one, or of course invent your own. Alternate title, you can put an annotation on the page, and it tells you what collection you're in, mLibrary being the website, and so forth. And then you can save the tag into the tagging system. And then once you've tagged some things, you can go into mTagger and see the things that you have tagged. It looks bigger when it's right in front of you. So if you want to come up here and look over my shoulder, it's lovely. But so you know, it's pretty standard tag cloud, and just below the little bubbly thing there, you can see the collection. So I can sort and prioritize or limit my own display of my tags by collections. If I'm looking for things in library books or in Merlin, our catalog, or web pages or digital images, I can mix and match from there. So here you can, so this is expanding to kind of everything that's been tagged, and again, you can limit that global tag view by toggling those things on and off. And we've discovered some interesting usability questions about how to present this, which I'll talk about a bit later. So I'm torn with whether these numbers are really, really good or kind of sad and pathetic. And of course, I'm thinking really, really good as I want to continue the project. We got about 800 users in the system, which is a drop in the bucket in our user base of people enrolled at the university is around 40,000 or so, plus faculty and staff. So that's not really great as far as I'm concerned. But the people who are using it seem to be using it fairly intensively, so that's good, I guess. I think it's a good service. Doing a lot of tagging. We've got 2,400, give or take, unique total tags. Some of them applied multiple places, of course, about 2,000 unique ones, and just shy of 2,000 unique items tagged. And another thing we've noticed, obviously, I guess this is probably a truism, but people really tag selfishly and hope that somebody, don't care if anybody else will ever use it. Where our purpose was really to make other people find things. And there's a kind of a cross of purposes there that we're going to be addressing in our revision of the tool coming out early next year. So people are tagging things by subject. One of the things that I'll talk a bit about some other uses of tags in a minute. Excuse me. Well, that didn't help at all. Don't turn your head when you cough. It doesn't help. And the exception is that I said that most taggers tag very selfishly. Our librarians are going crazy tagging things. They're tending to build. They're doing what I hoped our patrons would be doing, which is building collections across the space of all of our stuff using tags. And they're also very, very precise in their tags. And it's funny to see the internal cataloger in many of us come out in a tagging system. So if you look at this tag cloud, this is just a snippet kind of absolutely everything. Can you guess which tags were added by librarians? The three that are huge, yes. we have three who have, actually one who's tagged a lot of DVD and his hobby is apparently film noir. Another librarian who's very interested in feminist issues, and so they kind of have the preponderance of things. But then if you look a little bit more deeply, and I admit it is exceptionally hard to do on this slide, you get a lot of things that are pretty obvious. Dry, I wouldn't know what that was linked to. Some course numbers like environment 160, which makes a lot of sense, and that's actually one of the things that we've been kind of advertising to our students. Tag stuff that you're using in a course by course number and share it with your project group so that all of you together can build a resource list that's useful and share information this way. The flip side of that is that some of the more competitive students may not want anybody else to know what cool resource they found and may not tag it at all for that reason. In some feedback, we discovered that a few people have actually felt that way, but most don't. But there have been a few students, particularly at the upper levels of graduate school, who are a bit more selfish in the way that they don't tag, or they don't tag for selfish reasons. This is also, I think, quite gratifying, is the way that it's used is spread across really all levels of the university pretty evenly. Faculty and staff, which includes most people classified as librarians, are in there. Graduate students are faculty and staff is about a third. Graduate students and undergraduates are in a dead heat at about 23%. People who have alumni accounts, about 4%, and unknown, with the balance of 18 or so percent. Now, we've opened this up to anybody. You need to have a University of Michigan login to get into the system, but anybody can get a friend account, as it's called, and go in and play with it. And so the unknown is people that we don't, that are from out there in the world someplace, who've created a U of M account, as well as people who's, for whatever reason, their Michigan directory entry doesn't tell us who they are. But I guess I'm quite pleased overall by the spread. I really thought it'd be slanted heavily towards the undergrads as the people who might get this the best and see this as something more useful to them. But having the graduate students and faculty staff tending to be older folks, even if you correct for having a lot of librarians in that faculty staff area, is quite nice to see. Again, this is probably no surprise that things in the library catalog, that's most of what we have seen tagged. There are, after all, whatever, 7 million things in the catalog and 50,000 web pages and that and so on. So if you're just going to tag randomly, you're going to get a lot of library stuff. But that's, people really seem to, where they are tagging and where things get tagged with more detail seems to be in the catalog. Web pages and images, catalog and images. Web pages get maybe one tag per user, generally. Books in the catalog get many more than that when somebody tags them. And images are the things that get tagged very, very detailed. People go through an image and list everything in it and talk about the color of the carpet and all sorts of interesting things like that. So doing more metadata for it than librarians have the time, interest, or really reason to do. And that tiny little 0% SPO is our publishing office, which I don't think has actually been used at all as yet, or it's so small that it doesn't fall below the, doesn't even amount 1%. That's our, we have a scholarly publishing group in the library that puts out peer-reviewed open access journals. And we just went backwards. So once things have been tagged, what do you do with it? What's the value? Within the tag cloud that appears on virtually everything that is ours, you see there's a bunch of tags. There's you can add a tag yourself, a little help about what is a tag in the upper right. Then in the lower left, a little interface to search the tags. You can always go into the application to do your searching. But you may also search directly from the tag cloud. And when you click in there, the bottom changes, and it lets you pick, you can either search everything or limit your search for a tag in a collection. So it's a way to limit. You can look for anything that page is tagged, for instance, internet, and then do a search on internet in the catalog or in web pages or in someplace else as a way to focus your search, essentially providing facets in the tag cloud. And then if you do all tags and items, you can search. You can, as I was saying, you can do your search and limit it to a specific piece of the set of tags that we offer. Everything that is in mTagger is RSSable. And in addition to being able to, for me, just to see what's happening, it's a great way to see what interesting tags have bubbled up. But every search you do, any user, any individual tag or any combination of users and tags as a search also has an RSS feed. So if you want to see what your professor has tagged, you can do that. If you want to see what people have tagged in your subject area, again, you can subscribe to those feeds. Or you can just do general searches, which include the brief metadata that we collect, titles, any annotations that users have applied to those pages. So there, just at the top, you have the little RSS gizmo there, icon for a tag cloud, and again, a search. Or if you want to see what I've tagged research, there you go. We also offer, we've opened up the application to an API. So anybody, anywhere can come in and pull tags out of our system. There's a link there at the bottom if you want to go see it, but you can query the system and pull things out in RSS, in styled HTML, JSON or anything or those formats. I think there when we had a PHP array, I think that I left that off the list. But what we have used that for internally is as a way to build subject guides. As I said, librarians are very happy and busy doing tagging at what compared to the non-librarians is a fairly granular level and very specific level. So it makes a fairly easy to use tool for a librarian to tag things across the library and pull it together into a dynamic subject guide, allowing you to, and then through the APIs, you can pull together things that you've, you know, several tags section by section, or include them in another web page. So you get a live interface to the tag cloud. If you're feeling a bit gutsier, you can open it up to, but everybody has tagged this and see what anybody puts into the subject guide. That sort of defeats the purpose from the librarian's point of view in many cases, not having much faith in the public to tag things correctly. But it does, it's a very nice tool for building that kind of subject guide. And as a sample, pulled out dynamically from it. You may have noticed in my tag cloud, I had a couple of multicultural periodicals, multicultural databases, gone through and tagged things that way, based on one of our old print subject guides. And then so just going through and labeling things, and this is then dynamically generated and always live and up to date. You can, of course, go in, edit, delete, add, do things with your tags. And the thing that probably caused the most discussion within our library when we were building mTagger was the idea of anonymity and privacy and public view. mTagger, by default, is a very public system associated with your University of Michigan login name, your email address, basically. And so if you use the system, by default, everything that you tag is associated with you personally. Now, this has had the benefit of enabling us to not have anything in the tagging cloud entered by anybody that, I guess, raises eyebrows because it's prurient, awful, nasty language, anything like that, which actually surprises me a great deal, that people have tagged cleanly, I guess you'd say. So having people watch over your shoulder, I think, works in that regard. But as I mentioned earlier, there's the idea, if you want to keep your research to yourself, you don't want people to know who is tagging things a certain way, or you don't want to expose your research to others, we do offer anonymous tagging, which means we hide your name to the public, but your tags and your descriptions are still there. So we don't have a way, and this was a conscious decision, not to be completely anonymous and tag only for yourself. Interestingly, as Eric mentioned in his talk earlier, librarians are often much more concerned about privacy than our users. And we have found that to be true. We've had half a dozen or a dozen librarians tell me that they wouldn't use this system because they couldn't keep it to themselves, either on a global level or on a tag level. And I haven't had a single user provide any feedback at all in focus groups or just by email or any other means that they are concerned about their name being, their identity somehow being matched with it. Now, we may be missing some people who don't tell us and don't talk about it, but I found that very interesting that the librarians among us were the most, that they really wanted to have that anonymity, even though for the most part, they were trying to push the content out to people through the tagging. They really wanted everybody else to have that privacy. So that's been an interesting discussion within the library. So as I said, that was talking about some of the issues and challenges. As you can tell from our usage numbers, it's been a little bit difficult getting people to take note of the service. And we've done all sorts of advertising. Of course, it's slapped all over our website, so it's fairly hard to miss. My favorite promo tool that we had is these wonderful massive tag sticky notes that we got. And you can, the idea was you could tag something and call it here's the lectern, and just slap it on there. So just tag the item. We slapped with these all over the library, and the librarians had a lot of fun tagging things. And some students did too, but mostly they went into, I think, onto desks and got used. We did, you know, a lot of promotional type things like that of trying to get the word out. And we've integrated mTagger into our bibliographic instruction classes. Obviously, a very brief mention. We get only so many minutes. I think 30 with some of the freshmen, and this is probably not the most important thing to let them know about. But I think it is one. And then most of our use, I think, is coming really just through word of mouth. And that's something that we are going to be enabling or hoping to do much, much better than we do now in the next version. So we've got, we launched this, as I said, in early winter, February. And like most projects, we just kind of said, hey, what happens if we do this? And so we did it without doing a lot of usability work or really, you know, a little bit of focus group, but not really testing out the concepts very well. We just got something up there to see what would happen, see if it stuck. Over the summer, I was able to get a couple of library students, information science students from our library school to work on an internship doing formal usability studies of the tool. And they came back with some, you know, a lot of suggestions and recommendations based on more focus groups, usability sessions with people, and heuristic analyses. And a couple of the big things that we should have thought of, it should have been darned clear to us in web systems, was that we kind of made a web 1.5 application, not quite web 2.0. We had enabled people to input stuff into the system, but we hadn't come up with an easy way to share it with others, to email this link or this set of links to somebody else. We have the APIs, but I think most of you would agree that, you know, only a programmer is going to use the API. Nobody else is going to figure out how to program something and make it happen. So we didn't build any widgets to let those APIs be really approachable from the user side. And really, what kind of one of those head-slapping moments, the collections, really, the way it's presented is buttons that you click on and off. I mean, that's really facets. But we presented it in a way that doesn't look like a facet as anybody has ever seen it in any other system. And so it's obvious in retrospect that we should have, you know, kind of made those, you know, look more facet-like on the column on the side and have more clear text about how to add and delete things from the facet. So we're going to address a lot of those issues. As I said, we talked about privacy, anonymity with users that were, you know, selected, either kind of, you know, they happened to be, have the misfortune to be using a computer in the reference room, and we, you know, grabbed them and asked them to take a look at the tool. Again, I was pleased to see that the anonymity privacy thing, that they didn't really, most students didn't really care. They thought that was just fine and dandy that their unique name, UMID, was associated with things. But what they were interested in doing was having easier ways to find other individuals who were tagging the same thing, not just the tag club, but they looked for ways so that I can find people in my department, in my class, who are doing the same kind of thing. We're not quite sure how to handle that request, frankly, but ways to leverage registration information so you could build, maybe while preserving student because of US privacy laws, not necessarily showing who is in a class, but showing in an anonymized way people enrolled in a class's tags related to that class. And that opens up a lot of questions between us and the folks who own the registrar's data, and we're not quite sure if we can actually do this, but that's what we would like to do, and we're going to attempt to come up with some way to make sharing more intuitive and more obvious, perhaps even at the level of putting it into our online course systems, our Sakai installation, and having ways for people in a class to have their tags that are relevant to that class feed into their course homepage. We're in the midst of a ViewFind test that was going to be launching in a few months, an alternative library catalog interface, and so we're going to be building this in much as we built it into our current catalog, and we're going to make sure that things that are tagged in one appear in the other, since the books, the items are the same. So if somebody goes into the ViewFind edition and looks for things they tag, it'll also appear in the old current catalog. And as long as we have both systems up, which is at this point, we don't know how long, you know, when, if ever, we turn off the old, beloved, by somebody, OPAC, we would be able to tag in both places. That sort of breaks the concept of a permanent link in a permanent URL, but we think it does so in a good way. And the other place that we are planning to expand it is into what is now called the HathiTrust. I cannot explain why we picked that name. The Google Book Project at the University of Michigan, formerly known as MBooks, has expanded to include into a larger repository for essentially the Big Ten plus the University of Chicago for now, and looking for other partners who have digitized content. So there'll be one giant library, digital library of full text materials. So we're looking for ways to push MTagger or a version of it into that. That's not quite a University of, it's no longer a University of Michigan entity. So it's not quite as, we'll have to figure out again a way to allow the tagging and sharing of tags across systems while keeping the Michiganness of it out a little bit from the HathiTrust. See, Hathi is a Hindi word for elephant. I still don't know why it was picked for that product, but that it was. How did we build this? We did it in-house. We didn't start from, we looked at some of the open source tagging tools out there, but decided to kind of start from scratch. PHP with the Cake environment, MySQL and tons of JavaScript on web pages to create permalinks in our catalog when the catalog doesn't readily offer them, to snip out parts of the page and create it. And with, I think I'm probably going to hit three of the multiple reasons that we don't do open source in this sad excuse. We will make it open source once we've cleaned up the comments a little bit and gotten rid of some of the ugly code and made some fixes that we really think we should make and we're embarrassed to show it to people. We have shared it with a few institutions, but we will formally send it on its way in the next release. And once we've answered some of the questions and solved some of the problems that were identified, which undoubtedly will create new problems, but maybe we can get some other help in fixing them. That's the end of my formal presentation, and I did my usual thing of talking so fast that I did it in far too little time. I would be happy to answer any questions you have. And yes, in the back?